Hello, America. I want you to imagine something for just a second. It's 10 o'clock at night. You're out walking the dog, last time before the entire family settles down for the night. You're about to go to bed. The dog stops, you know, to do his thing, and you glance up just in time to see a very distinct flash of light way up in the night sky. The heck was that? Now, you live in a state directly in the middle of the United States, but what you're not aware of is that two similar flashes of light were also observed by other people, one on the East Coast, high up in the sky, and one in the West. These three flashes of light were strategically placed nuclear explosions. They didn't blow up any cities. They were way up in space, up above the cities. They were detonated 200 miles above the surface of the Earth. In those three locations, they were put there for a very specific reason. You would obviously be well beyond the blast range. You don't feel a shock or a heat wave. There is no fire. But something else has happened. The nuclear explosions instantly begin a reaction between the ionosphere and the Earth's magnetic field. Due to the placement of all three nuclear blasts, only three, a surge of electromagnetic current blankets the entire continental United States. That is all it would take to send the entire country into the Stone Age. All lights, all power, everything that runs on electricity, your car, everything worthless. Food production stops. Water would stop flowing. Medical services would be down. You couldn't call anyone for help. There's no phones that work. Would you be prepared? Now, most people think that's far-fetched, right? There's no way a nuclear power would risk global nuclear war, right? Well, I don't know anymore. Many countries like Russia and China are actually considering an electromagnetic pulse attack, not a nuclear war that vaporizes cities and people, but just that pulse in the sky, the one I just described. They're putting that in a category of electronic and information warfare. It's an EMP, and it is beyond the level of a computer virus. It's not an actual nuclear attack in their eyes. But it's not just adversaries like Russia and China that could do this. North Korea or Iran could put two ships off of the coasts, all still in international waters, and launch them from two boats. Okay, imagine something else. Imagine that Russia suffers a major terrorist attack. Let's say ISIS kills around 60 people, brutally injures over 100 more. Let's say it's very, very public, maybe a concert. Then let's imagine that Putin immediately addresses the nation and says this, quote, "This wrongdoing can only be a link in the chain of attempts of those who since 2014 have been fighting with our country through the hands of the Kyiv neo-Nazi regime." That those have been fighting our countries through the hands of Ukraine. Well, crap, I wonder who he's talking about. I'm having a hard time remembering what was it we were willing to do when we found out that they were complicit with Al-Qaeda for 9/11. Saudi Arabia, we still deny that to this day. We know that the ISIS attack in Russia did happen. We know that Putin did say those things. Thank God it stopped there. But he is blaming us. We were willing to invade Afghanistan. What is it that Russia is willing to do? But I get it. An EMP attack destroying our power grid might sound too extreme. So let me give you another scenario. Perhaps more likely to happen. This is a graphic that shows the U.S. electricity that is controlled by three main regional grids, Western, Eastern, and Texas. A study by the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission ran a scenario where a coordinated attack on nine regional substations was all it took to completely knock out the entire grid of the United States. No matter if it's an attack of this nature, just hacking in to our power grid, or an EMP attack from our country like Russia or China, the results are exactly the same. From that same study, quote, the entire United States grid would be down for at least 18 months, probably longer, a year or two, without having trucks to deliver things. No water, no medical services, no communications, nothing. How many survive an attack like that? We know that China and Russia are already hacking into our power grid. They are telling us now they can do this. The United States has an EMP task force, and it estimates that 70 to 90% of the U.S. population would die within the first year. That's the government's estimate. And when you think about it, it actually makes sense. How are you going to get your food? Most people don't even know how food is grown, or that it is grown, or that it comes from an animal or a farm. How many of us have any kind of farming knowledge whatsoever? How many of us in the cities could find and use clean water? How many of us are on heart medication or some sort of medication that is extending our lives? High blood pressure medication. 30 days, you might have a supply for 30 days, but after that, what happens? That's 297.9 million people just in America dead in 12 months. Now, let me ask you again, how prepared are you? I think we're in the most dangerous time our country has been in my lifetime. These are hypothetical situations, and I'm not meaning to scare you, but perhaps wake some of your neighbors up, because they are very real. This is going to be kind of a freaky show today, but it's also a hopeful show. No one is laughing at the prepper movement anymore. The mainstream media used to laugh at preppers, kind of weird white right-wing crazies, right? But there was a story that just came out, I think, last week from NBC News. It was an article on how the prepper culture is now diversifying all races. Thank goodness we know all sexual orientations. They observed white, black, brown, gay, hippie, and every other group they try to sectionalize us apart in. Everyone is getting prepared because there's something inside of us that is warning all of us something bad is coming. NBC observed that millions of Americans, and I quote, no longer feel they can always count on the government or private industry to provide the basics like electricity, water, and food, end quote. Yep. But as I'll show you later in the show, it is shocking just how unprepared our government is. It's actually dereliction of duty. I'm going to show you the actual government exercises and evaluations where they fully admit, yeah, we kind of suck at this. Nothing's being done, so people better be prepared on their own. That's a paraphrase, but it's damn close to a quote. It's bad. But I think it goes much deeper than that. Has anybody noticed the priorities of every major Western government right now? It's not preparation. It's not food. It's not water. It's not energy or preparing a power grid or security for their people. They're too busy playing woke, DEI, great reset games. And as NBC observed, all races, creeds, and political affiliations are beginning to take notice. As of last week, farmer protests continued in Europe. Convoys of tractors tried to shut down Parliament Square in London. And while the majority of the global mainstream media refuses to talk about any of this, at least in any kind of detail, the farmers are winning. The farmers make sense. If you read the words of people in Italy, Germany, Sweden, Europe, anywhere in Europe, or in London, they're saying exactly the same thing that a lot of people in America are saying. These guys are actually forcing the European Union last week to shelve, not destroy, but to shelve some of their ridiculous restrictions that were part of their climate protection plan. Look at the protest signs. No farms, no food. Hello? Pretty basic, pretty obvious. But our governments are not concerned about the basics anymore, it seems. And all backgrounds of people are beginning to notice this. Is the government or governments all around the world concerned about what might happen if they screw with the food supply? If they do, then why are they doing it? Why are they ignoring hundreds of years of examples, case studies, where this kinds of action caused millions to die in only one country at a time? Is the government concerned about what might happen if they meddle with the water supply? Let me show you something that came out a year ago. The Biden administration tried to seize control of more bodies of water, including the puddles in your driveway. They were utilizing the Clean Water Act. They took it to the Supreme Court to overrule Joe Biden, thank goodness. But when has that ever stopped the federal government under Biden? Biden continues to forgive student loans to this day against the Supreme Court. This government doesn't care about the basic needs for sustaining life. They are making it hard to produce clean energy, driving up the cost of heating and cooling in our homes. And all of this is happening while it is estimated that our energy grid already today needs $7 trillion in upgrades. What are they doing? They're not upgrading the power grid. Instead, they're trying to sell you electric cars, which will put more demands on the already antiquated power grid. Everyone is starting to notice that not only does government not care, it seems that there is a full-on assault on the basic needs of life. So, are we still Americans? Because I honestly don't know. The America I grew up in, where my grandfather and grandmother lived through the Great Depression, they wouldn't have waited for the government to come and save us. They would have thought that was insane. They prepared. My grandmother canned. Nobody would wait for the government. If you haven't stopped preparing, if you haven't started yet, it's probably going to seem overwhelming. But I'm going to show you exactly how later in the show. And your preparation, don't get overwhelmed. It needs to begin now. And it can start in small steps. Because the government is all but laughing in our faces about how little they care about the possibility of a disaster. If you think that's hyperbole, I will show it to you in their own words next. I want to talk to you about Jace Medical. I was up on the ranch, and I'm working with Jace on a project that I will tell you about once we get it underway, but I think it's something all communities should pay attention to. Jace Medical is a company they found, I don't know, about 3 years ago, and they are providing the medicine that you might need. So you could have a year's worth of heart medicine, blood pressure medicine. My daughters need anti-seizure medication. If I can't get it for a year, what happens? Now, they start with a personalized emergency kit that contains five essential antibiotics that treat the most common and deadly bacterial infections. Jace is continually working to expand their medication offerings. They've added ivermectin, in case you have a horse that comes down with a cold, I guess. They've added that to the Jace case. You can buy a gift card for your family or loved ones so they can get a Jace case of their own and personalize it to their needs. Please be prepared to care for yourself and your loved ones today. To get yours, go to JaceMedical.com. Enter the promo code Beck at checkout for a discount on your order. That's promo code Beck at JaceMedical.com. As I mentioned earlier, people are beginning to wake up. They're worried. And instead of worrying, we should prepare. And we should cross all aisles and all differences that we have. And we should be doing this as communities because we're going to need to count on each other. The government's priorities right now clearly are not the basics. And both the government and the U.S., us, are severely underprepared. I want you to look at Hurricane Sandy. Do you remember this in 2012? I want to give you the damage assessment provided by the city of New York. You ready? 44 people died. 20,000 buildings were damaged. They were without power for 2 weeks. 800,000 people lost all power overall. 2 million people without telecommunications. $900 million in transportation infrastructure. It was catastrophic, okay? And it was cold and wet, and people were without power. But there were communities all around the country. I mean, I know Mercury One was there helping them. People were without power. They needed to access facilities for food, medical facilities, water, supplies, all of it. Transportation was wrecked. Now, Sandy was a wake-up call for New York City. Did they answer it? Of course not. You know the answer. 2 years ago, the New York State Comptroller audited the city to see how much progress they've made in the decade that followed Hurricane Sandy to get prepared for future disasters. New York City assigned itself hundreds of what they call mitigation actions. In other words, if the city will just implement these programs, they'd be prepped for a disaster that destroyed homes, businesses, transportation, communications, and energy. Sounds great, right? New Yorkers are saved. No. There was an audit board. This is what it found. 55% of all the city's mitigation actions didn't have finish dates. Okay? Was the work even completed for half of the entire prepping plan? Nobody knows. 53% of all of the mitigation actions didn't have a start date. Had over half of the plan even begun yet? Nobody knew. Keep in mind, this is 10 years after one of the worst natural disasters to hit the city of New York. A decade. And they don't even know if the majority of the plan was completed or even began. Does that sound like a government that you trust to take care of you, your welfare, and your family if something happens? Do you think your town is any more prepared? Do they really care whether you have access to food, water, and energy? Well, yeah, in theory, but in action, no, not at all, at least in New York City. But this is a systemic problem. This is not a localized problem. Let me show you an after-action report, okay? Cascadia, rising exercise, after-action report. This is from a catastrophic disaster scenario that was conducted in 2016. The exercise simulated the government response to a massive earthquake and tsunami along the northern west coast. If the government was capable enough to handle a major disaster, this scenario would prove it. So how'd they do? Well, let's just say a massive fail. The after-action report admitted that there is, quote, an urgent need for state and local government to coordinate response plans. They conceded that governments, quote, have not sufficiently planned. I don't even know where to start with this report. It's like if the boss on the show Undercover Boss goes undercover to find his employees. Instead of working, they're just smoking pot, sleeping, and eating nachos all day. That's how bad this is. I'll just read you some quotes from their findings. Here's one. The state's current mindset and approach to disaster response is not suitable. It stated that by day 4 of the exercise, Multiple and persistent problems regarding public health and public safety remained with no immediate fixes available. Think about that. Day four, all hell had broken loose. Communications, not prepared. Mass care, things like medical, food, shelter, water, inadequate. They said that the planned solution to get the transportation system back up and running had no direction. The government was tested. The government failed. And this disaster only focused on the relief efforts in one area. Imagine what it would be like if something happened that affected the entire country. What if the entire power grid went down? What if it didn't come back for an entire year? I know the global warming people would love it because lots of humans would be dead. Check this out from the executive summary of their report. Their top overarching conclusion: there is an urgent need for residents to prepare. Have you heard that from your government? Has your state or federal government said, hey, there's an urgent need because we're not ready? You should be prepared. When it comes to reacting when disaster strikes, we are our best hope. We are the first responders. We cannot rely on the government or anybody else to come and save us. Now, getting started in prepping might seem overwhelming, but it's actually really easy. And I'm going to show you how. Lots of chalkboards coming next. All right, getting prepared for a minor emergency sounds complicated enough as it is, but preparing for a disaster, a major, either global or continental disaster, is absolutely downright overwhelming. Most people quit before they even begin, but it's actually really easy and inexpensive. You just have to take it one bite at a time. Getting ready for something gradually and in stages. Don't jump directly into the deep end with, oh, we got to have a doomsday bunker. Start with what the government is now ignoring, the basics, okay? This is Maslow's hierarchy. This is what we need to have a society and live. And you begin at the very bottom of the sections of the pyramid: food, water, shelter, health, finances. This is where it all begins. Eventually, you could go into depth the farther up on the pyramid, but these two are essential. Let me just say, we found a website while preparing this show for you. It's called theprepared.com. They're not a client or a sponsor of this program, so I have nothing to gain from that. But like all of our sponsors, I really believe what they're doing is great. We have links to their pages up at glennbeck.com, and you can click directly on the items that we're going to talk about here, and you can even buy them directly to continue your prepping plan if you want. Again, I'm not making any money on this. It's a separate website. It is the easiest way not only to get started, but to make sure you stay on your plan and move forward with it. So let me go back to the bottom of Maslow's hierarchy. Preppers have their own kind of language for this. They call it the rule of threes. You can survive without air for 3 minutes. Don't get into a coffin. You can last 3 hours without shelter in very bad conditions. You can go 3 days without water, 3 weeks without food. Maybe some of us could go a little longer. You lock these three down, and you're 90% of the way there. This is what we're going to concentrate on. I also want to say, all studies show, and think about what happened in New Orleans just a few years back. You have 72 hours to get to safety. After 3 days, bad guys start to appear because they realize nobody's coming to help. All right. So let's concentrate on the threes here. These are the six basic steps to start prepping. Okay, the first one is build a solid personal finance and Health Foundation. I'm not doing that one. I need to. The best way to insulate yourself in an economic crisis is to get as debt-free as you can. We also need to get into the financial position where we can dedicate a few extra dollars every month to advance our PrEP plan. Don't overspend or go crazy. Don't do it. Just do what you responsibly can. We also need to make sure that bad health won't get in the way of surviving when it's needed. Can you walk a considerable distance if needed? Nope. Can you carry things that you used to just throw in the car? Nope. Finances and health are at the top of the list. Now, second one, get your home ready for 2 weeks of self-reliance. The government used to say 72 hours, but we saw in places like New York after Hurricane Sandy, that's bullcrap. Some cases, people were out of power for up to 2 weeks. The next one is bug out. Have go bags. Okay, we're going to get to that here in a second. When you look at what you need to get your home ready for 2 weeks is you need 15 gallons of water per person. That's 1 gallon person per day. For 2 weeks, you need 23,000 calories per person. That's 1,500 calories per person per day. For fire, you need lighters, matches, fire starters, light, flashlights, candles, lanterns, heating and cooling, indoor heater, extra blankets, USB-powered fan, shelter, beyond home, tarps for improvised shelter if you need to move, medical. Create a list of the medical supplies that your family needs. There's also a list that you can look up and start with. Links provided at glenbeck.com. When it comes to hygiene, wet wipes, sanitizer, camp soap, communications. This is my summer project. Learn and get licensed on a ham radio or grab a one-way NOAA radio. Power. Get spare batteries, rechargers, invest in a solar charger. Tools, axe, shovel, work gloves, wrenches, zip ties, duct tape, self-defense, guns and ammo, cash. This one's difficult. Store as much as you can affordably keep and reasonably keep. But I would think more of bartering items. Alcohol. That's not only going to be a lot of alcoholics that need alcohol and will pretty much trade you anything for it, but also it is a pain relief substitute. Cigarettes, precious metals, anything that people would trade for. Now, all of these items should be the foundation for your evolving plan. But eventually, you need to consider that maybe your home is no longer safe to hunker down in. One reason it might not be is EMP. Nothing in your house will work. There's a link at glenbeck.com to show you what I just put into my house. I mean, I may have overdone it a little bit. You wouldn't imagine me doing that. But I think I have one on my toaster even. It is really important to be able to stop the pulse from going into everything that you have. You need to be ready, and you also need to be able to bug out, have a go bag. Go bags are really important. These are go bags prepared for each member of the family. Here's what's in a go bag, and I'll tell you if I have them in my go bag or not. First aid kit, yes. 32 ounces of water, yes. Canteen, I don't think so. Water filter, yes. Purification tablets, essential. Ready-to-eat food, yes. Lighter, times two, yes. Tinder, I don't think so. Headlamp, yes. Field knife, yes. Multi-tool. Cordage, 50 feet, I don't think I have that. Tarp, yes. Waterproof paper and pen, nope, didn't think of it. Personal documents, really important. Cash, condensed soap, toilet paper, nail clippers, nope. Hat, socks, top, base layer, pants, underwear. People don't even think of this stuff. If you're living in a place with four seasons and you got to go, what season are you going in? Do you have the appropriate clothes? What's not on this list? Shoes. really comfortable, durable, like hiking shoes for every member of the family. Jacket, bandana. Of course, I have one of those. One or two-way radio, USB charging cable, battery pack. I don't have that. Respirator. I don't have that. Trash bags times two, and storage bags. Here's the most important. This weighs about 20 pounds, and everybody in your family carry 20 pounds. Next, prepare for emergencies away from home. Exercise your Second Amendment right to protect yourself. Have a plan for the whole family to rally together and get back home. Learn core skills, so important, and practice them. Core skills with just the gear. Six is share what you've learned. Build a base of like-minded friends and family. I personally think none of this is even good. There are between 20 and 30 million people now that are part of this community, and a lot of them are way ahead. You want to be a part of this community, and every single community should be coming together. Remember, that's 10% of the country that will be prepared. Going to be a lot of people that need help. This is how you begin. But it doesn't mean everything has to come together all at once. Start small. Gradually check things off the list. You have things for a bug out bag. You have most of this probably in your home already. You'll be ready for 2 full weeks of self-reliance. Then, after you have that, then take the next step. An attack on the power grid could knock power out for 18 months or longer. I don't even know if I'm prepared for that. Oh, yes, I am. I don't know. Eventually, you could graduate on to purchasing a generator, storing fuel. Prepping is something that should never, ever have to stop. And once you really start, it's hard to stop. But the hard part of prepping is beginning. As I mentioned earlier, being somebody who is prepared used to be something people made fun of, but now it's mainstream. Everyone is sensing in their government the government's not taking basic needs. You feel it in your gut. They're actually going the opposite direction. They've shown us time and time again we cannot rely on them, and I'm telling you we should not anyway. This is up to us. We just have to get started. Back in a minute. Okay, one of the things I told you about, these are difficult times for the Republic right now. We are printing money like it's going out of style. And it is going out of style because we are printing $1 trillion every 100 days. Inflation is still driving the cost of goods and services through the roof. People are struggling. It's going to get worse. You need to prepare mentally for finances. Protect what you do have in your savings with an asset that you can trust, gold. I made my very first purchase back in 2000, right around 2000, with a company I still trust, Lear Capital. My original sales representative is still there, and the investment that I made 22 years ago has quadrupled. Lear helped me prepare for the coming insanity, and they can help you do the same thing. Don't wait around for things to get worse. Do what's right for your money today. You are smart enough to figure this out. I know that Lear has $3 billion in trusted transactions, thousands of five-star reviews, 24-hour risk-free purchase guarantee. So if you're like, I made a mistake, Lear is the precious metal leader that you can trust. Get your free wealth protection guide. That's all I'm asking you to do. Just get that. Make the decision. Take a breath. Pray on it. Lear will also credit your account $250 towards your purchase just because you watch or listen to me. So call today, 800-957-GOLD, 800-957-GOLD. The label prepper is no longer a slander. People all over the world are beginning to take steps to ensure their families will be well cared for if and when disaster strikes. But why are the supposed crazies now the ones that people are trying to catch up with? Is this an actual movement? Is it a fad? Dr. Chris Ellis. He earned his PhD at Cornell University. He's also a colonel in the U.S. Army. He has served a variety of disaster and homeland defense positions. He's analyzed the history and growth of preparedness in America. He even created a model that explains why people do or do not prep. Dr. Ellis joining us now. May I call you Dr. Colonel, because that's just the coolest title.
Please ever. Just call me Chris. A lot of people ask me. Call me Chris. Thanks.
So, Chris, why is it that people do or do not prep?
So what I did is I looked globally to find examples of everything that could explain the people who are doing absolutely nothing to people who go and buy a floor in a former nuclear silo. And what I found is very akin to your hierarchy of needs. So the overwhelming thing is what people are looking for is a sense of agency if they want to go and change things. They attain this resilient mindset because they look at disasters, they look at what governments are doing or are not doing, and then they reflect back on that through this thing called ontological security, the security of self. And they say, I want to make a change. I want to be more positive for the future. And then they go out and they take these prepping actions. So that is what explains why people do things the way that they do. They reflect the fear that they have with the actions that they take and mesh those together. So there's five rough heuristics of types, but that's what my model has looked at. And I've examined this from Taiwan to Sweden to Israel to America to look at this globally. And I have, as of yet, I've not found a flaw in the model as of right now.
So have you noticed, and I gather from what you just said, that because I found this to be true, once I had, you know, X number amount of food for my family, I felt much more relaxed. It felt good, you know? It was like such a weight coming off of my, that I didn't expect. I remember sitting on the stairs going down to the basement, and I had the food supply finished for the family. And I mean, I know this isn't saying much for me, but I actually cried. It was such a relief to have that.
Yes, so that is the concept of ontological security, the security of self. Do I feel confident? Do I feel secure in my being? So some people believe that they're afraid of without rule of law scenarios, so they go buy guns. Some people are afraid of climate change or GMOs, so they go and they homestead and they raise chickens. So they match their fears with their actions, and that sense of agency builds inside of them this sense of resilience and preparedness.
Okay. So is this... this prepping movement, and NBC says, is starting to go mainstream. You know, I think 10% is not mainstream, but it is good that people from all walks of life are doing it. Is this, you think this is real? Is it growing?
I do. And I can, one of the things that I set out with my dissertation research is that I was kind of tired of the anecdotes and the caricatures of preppers. So I wanted to look at hardcore analytic data, at least for America, across the entire nation, to find out the demographics of preppers. So I have an actual count based upon my definition, which is the same that Bradley Garrett gave you a year ago when you interviewed him for his bunker book. And my definition is 31 days at home of survival. So utilizing that as a number, I have found that in 2017, we had about 10 million people that were prepping. By 2020, it had jumped up to 15 million, and now it's just over 20 million people. So looking at the lower ends, that's about 8% of Americans. When they did these interviews, they interviewed individuals. If you double that and believe that it's a couple doing this, then we're at 16%. And that's a very important number statistically. And the reason why is this. There's this thing called the 16% rule, and it applies mostly to technology, but it also applies to preparedness and social memes as well. When you hit 16%, you're right on the cusp between early adapters and the early majority. Right. You're one standard deviation away from the mean. And so right now, we've kind of hit this plateau, and I'm waiting to see which direction it breaks, up or down.
I would imagine. I mean, why are most people saying that they're doing this? I would imagine... I mean, I keep saying it's because people, they instinctively see it and they know who, no matter who you vote for, no matter what your politics are, you're looking at this going, this could fly apart quickly.
So from 2010 to roughly 2019, the three top things that people cited were number one for why they prepared. Number one, 9/11. Number two, Hurricane Katrina. And number three, the 2007 and 2008 financial collapse. And that was their motivation to kind of move forward. Those are the most cited things. We're seeing a bit different now, 2020, 21, 22, and 23. What we're seeing is COVID was cited, the pandemic. We're seeing the war in Ukraine with Russia. We are seeing inflation. We're seeing immigration pop up. And then also just a bit of the political divide that we have in this country between left versus right and the fracturing of society as the more mainstream things of why people are citing why they've got into preparedness. It has kind of broken out of the small enclaves, but that's the reasons that I'm seeing right now for citation.
It's really interesting because you didn't mention the dollar, the spending, the what we're doing with inflation. And to me, that's one of the more concerning things. If nothing doesn't change towards the positive, we're at that place that I've heard presidents talk about and warn against since I was a little kid, where just the interest alone will surpass our budget of the Pentagon and Social Security. That's not something you can sustain as a country.
Well, for the inflation is very, difficult. Fiscal realities are difficult. I wait about a year for my data because it comes out in 23 for their survey. And so there's a time delay in what I have. So inflation will more than likely appear in the next set of data in the 2024 survey from FEMA.
Is this something that is happening all over the world? Because I'm watching, it seems to me that every country is being played left versus right. We're being played Republicans, Democrats, Democrats, Republicans. And that's really not what I think it is. I think that's a game on a stage show. We're actually talking about the elites all over the world in the Western world versus the regular people. Because I listen to the people on the streets. I don't care if they're in Germany or Spain or London. They're all pretty much saying the same thing. This is not sustainable. This is crushing the average person. So are we alone in this, or are other people prepping around the world?
Other people are prepping around the world, and they're doing it based upon their culture and where they're at. So, for example, one of the big things that happened in 2022 when the Russia-Ukraine war began is I got a phone call from the office of a head of state in Scandinavia saying, hey, one of the negative things that America has exported is this negative stereotype of preppers. We would really like our communities and our country to prepare at higher levels. How do you help us break through to our communities to let them know that prepping is not crazy? So I gave them some advice on how to do that. The country that I'm watching right now, and this is really fortuitous, is Taiwan. So in 2020, the COVID pandemic kind of laid the groundwork for assistance and logistical supplies pushing down throughout all of Taiwan. But Russia-Ukraine really changed the psyche of those living there. And so in 2023, the number of prepper groups in Taiwan increased to over 10. And they are not so much focused on a war with China, but more on just like natural disasters of what just happened yesterday. And so I'm really kind of fascinated to see what the after-action reviews of Taiwan come out, if these prepper groups were seen as a social good for the island after this after these earthquakes.
Who's the most prepared? I think Switzerland. Is it Switzerland?
It is.
Yeah. Because they actually, as a government, they require you to have a shelter, have food, et cetera, in there. I think as citizens, you're required to even have a gun.
You are required to, for those that went through the conscription program, yes. And then for the bunkers, they're actually a lot of our blast shelters. You either pay a tax to have your position in a public shelter, or you're mandated to have a private one. Other countries that are doing phenomenally well right now are Israel, Finland, and Japan.
Where do we even fit?
I think we're pretty good, to be completely honest, just simply because of the wealth of our natural resources and our culture. And we are rather set apart from a lot of the flashpoints in the world. So America isn't perfect, and that's the reason why they do things like Cascadia Rising to kind of run these exercises.
Yeah.
But I think we're doing far better than most believe.
That stuck out to me, Cascadia Rising. Cascadia is really a movement, if I'm not mistaken. Did it have anything to do with that movement?
I think it's just based upon the Cascade Mountains. I was born and raised in Washington State, so that's home for me.
Yeah, okay. Me too. When you're looking at things, like I talked about tonight, these are the catastrophic things, hacking into the power grid and destroying our power grid, or a high-altitude EMP, how likely do you think those things are?
I always say that there's a non-zero chance of things, but it's probably better just to prepare for the things that are more mundane. A winter storm that knocks out your power for a few days, a car accident, just getting home. The things on the further end of the scale aren't 0% chance, but that's not what I would recommend folks prepare for today. Just get ready for the things that are far more likely to happen, like a natural disaster.
What do you say to people who say, I just can't? I've heard this from so many people. It's too much. I just can't. I can't think about it, or I can't do it because it's just too much. I don't know where to start.
Too easy. Here's where you start. Go camping. Just go out and touch creation. Touch grass. Grab your kids. Go around the fire. Roast some s'mores. And just get those basic skills there from just going and camping. It's a natural good. It's a social good. That's a perfect place to start.
Thank you so much for all that you're doing. I think my uncle did a lot of the things that you did back in the 60s. He was part of the team that had to figure out how much soil to replenish, to put how much had to be removed and then put on, and how things were going in a disaster. And I'm glad there are people like you and him that have worked on these things for the rest of us. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
All right. Back in just a minute. So there is one thing that is not up on the board that's missing. You recognize it? Did you notice? We didn't talk about it. I think it is the most important thing that we have to do to fully be prepared for whatever may come. Again, I hope none of this stuff happens. God. Spiritually, not just physically, spiritually, prepare yourself. It's probably the most important thing you can do, and you can do that tonight. From Dallas, good night.